This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin. The coronavirus pandemic has been a reminder for many of us to make sure our affairs are in order. Yesterday, we took questions about wills and estate planning. Today, we're looking at advance directives. These are documents that spell out your preferences when it comes to end-of-life medical care. And we've brought on an expert to help answer your questions on this topic. Dr. Jessica Zitter is a critical and palliative care specialist and author of Extreme Measures, Finding a Better Path to the End of Life. Dr. Zitter, thanks so much for joining us.
So happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
And I just want to start by saying these are hard conversations for a lot of people to have. So I want to thank the people who sent in their questions for thinking these things through and showing us, you know, how you can talk about these things. Dr. Zitter, of course, I'm grateful to you for answering them. And I'm going to ask you to remind us about why you might want to think about advance directives.
Well, an advance directive really is such an important thing to have. It really helps to make sure that your preferences are honored at the end of life. And we're all sort of confronting that vision. We see it's up close and personal with the COVID-19 epidemic, pandemic. So, you know, COVID or not, there's a time when further intervention in the hospital just isn't going to help and actually can make things worse or increase suffering. So, you know, the default in our healthcare system is to just keep treating, keep adding on machines, connecting people to life support. And often, you know, this happens until someone dies. And then there's just a rising number of deaths in facilities where patients are just living on machinery. And it's really not what people say they would want in their lives. So that's why planning in advance and creating an advance directive and thinking about these things is such a critically important process. And again, I want to say one more thing, which is that the advance directive is not just a static form. It's a process of thinking about your values and thinking about how that will translate into what you want at the end of life and communicating that very important information to your loved ones who will be the ones who would have to speak for you if you can't speak for yourself.
So let's go to our listeners' questions. Here's Helen from the Bay Area.
I've heard that outcomes for COVID-19 patients who have to go on respirators are not especially good. Can you tell me more about these outcomes? I'm updating my advance directive, and I'd like to make choices based on likely outcomes. Thank you.
Dr. Zitter, I can tell you a number of people are asking about the survival rate of people who are put on ventilators. Can you tell us something about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the data that's been coming out, and again, this is an evolving situation, but the data that we're seeing in terms of people who go on ventilators with coronavirus is not looking very optimistic. I mean, most of the studies I've seen show fewer than 50% of people surviving. And, you know, being on a ventilator does not mean that you're going to live. So, you know, it's worse for those who are elderly and frail or who have underlying health conditions. And what's interesting is that this is also true in non-COVID times. These are some of the same types of statistics that we see. The National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization has what they're calling a COVID shared decision-making tool, which kind of helps you assess your likelihood of surviving COVID based on your age, your comorbidities, your, you know, other health conditions and current symptoms. And that could be something that can help you think about your preferences for treatment in the context of getting ill with COVID, including, you know, where you'd want to be, whether you'd want to focus primarily on comfort or on various degrees of life-saving effort.
And some people aren't just worried about survival. They want to know about quality of life. So here's a question in that vein.
Hi, this is Linda from Texas. How many people have fully recovered after being on a ventilator for COVID-19? And what residual effects do they have after being on the ventilator?
Okay, doctor?
Yeah. Well, again, you know, as I said just a second ago, that, you know, we're seeing fewer than 50% of people who are going on ventilators are surviving. And we're still, again, in the early stages of knowing what's going to happen with these survivors. We've certainly seen some people leave the hospitals and to great rounds of applause and everyone's excited. But there's a lot of concern that there will be some longstanding problems in terms of quality of life for those people. There's something called the post-ICU syndrome that happens for people, again, before COVID ever came into being, that patients who go into ICUs often don't, you know, come out with significant problems, whether cognitively, emotional, mental health, physical function. Some examples are, you know, 64% of survivors of ICU stays had problems with mobility at 6 months, and 32% had difficulties with just basic activities of daily living at 3 months. And, you know, as it impacts families, for example, a quarter of people coming out of ICU stays like that needed more than 50 hours per week of family caregiving. So this is a really important thing to know. It exists pre and post COVID, and it's possibly even worse with COVID, and there's some concern, and we're going to have to see how things go.
Let's listen to this next caller.
Hello, this is Anna Lou Perrineau. I'm calling from Beaverton, Oregon. I'm 86 years old and have an advance directive stating no life support, palliative care only. I don't want to be intubated, but I would like some assurance that my pacemaker will be disconnected and that I will be allowed to die without too much suffering. How can I assure that my directive will be respected?
Again, Dr. Zetter, I think this is a question that a lot of people have. Is it possible that a doctor or family members would go against the directives of a patient?
Well, you know, what I've seen far more commonly than that is that people just don't know what a person's preferences are. And that is such a tragedy that conversation hasn't happened. You know, it's very, very important. And this is why the advanced directive is such an important exercise to take on. And I want to just make a shout out to an organization that I think is really important, prepareforyourcare.org, which helps people to bring their values into alignment with the decisions that they would want vis-a-vis ventilators, vis-a-vis going to the hospital, vis-a-vis their pacemaker, et cetera. So it's very, very important to think about your values and make those decisions about specific medical treatments, but also to identify who that surrogate person is going to be and make sure that they know about those preferences.
And I have a question that speaks to that. This is from Joe McIntyre of Albuquerque, who wrote us and asked, should we carry our advance directive with us in case we don't want to be put on a ventilator and would prefer to die? I don't know, Dr. Zetter, what about that? How do you make sure your advance directive is seen by the people who need to see it?
Well, this is where it gets complicated. You know, there are a couple of different kinds of forms. There's the advance directive, and there's also something called a pulsed form. That's a physician order for life-sustaining treatment. If you are really, really sure that there is a specific treatment that you do not want to have, then it might benefit you to talk to your physician about signing an order, a doctor's order. An advance directive is not a doctor's order. This is an actual doctor's order saying, do not intubate this person. So I would recommend that people think about having that conversation with their physicians.
Well, thank you for this. You're an expert on palliative care. We don't have a lot of time left. We only have about a minute, but have you seen examples of humane care for people who are not being put on ventilators? What have you seen? As briefly as you can, please.
Well, I want to reassure you all that humanity and compassion should be a part of every level of medical care, whether you're getting full care in the ICU or you're getting support for dying.
Okay, that's Dr. Jessica Zetter. She's a critical and palliative care specialist and author of Extreme Measures, Finding a Better Path to the End of Life. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Tomorrow, we're giving career advice for students graduating from college during this crisis, and we'll tackle how to cut your own hair while socially distancing. Send us your questions on these topics by going to npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, use that hashtag NPR Conversation. This is The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.